right now that we get things rolling like we do every Tuesday at this hour by getting on the phone and welcoming to the program our friend, writer and critic, Colin Fleming. Colin, good afternoon.
How are you, Mr. Kimball?
I'm doing quite well. Any signs of spring in the greater Boston area?
Well, vernality might officially reign, but another nor'easter is due tomorrow, so no, not really.
I'm sorry to hear that. Let's talk of spring, though. Let's talk of green things and animals and children's lit, and let's start in the 100-acre wood with the work of A.A. Milne and Winnie the Pooh, which is an all-time favorite for me. And within that world, everybody seems to have their favorite character. You have opted for Eeyore.
Who's yours?
Eeyore. Yeah,
okay.
one and the same.
So we agree.
And we do, yeah. Now, Carrie's a Tigger man, as many people are.
Well, you must have a lot of energy then.
I'm just a fan. I think as much as anything, I had a cat named Tiger when I was a kid.
There you go.
So I said, oh, Tiger.
My wife leans toward Piglet. So yeah, everybody's got their own. But why is it Eeyore for you?
Eeyore for me, you know, it's funny because in some ways it ought to be Pooh for me because Pooh played a very central role in the very beginning of my life. So I was actually conceived in New Bedford. That sounds like a bit like the start of Tristram Shandy. And my biological mother was 15. And my biological father was in his 20s. He was married. He had a couple of kids. And because of the shame and all of that at the time, my biological mother was sent to Cape Cod to be away from all of the controversy where I was born on a boat, interestingly enough.
Wow.
And we came back to New Bedford separately. She went back to her life, and I went to a foster home. But before that happened, she gave me the one thing she gave me, well, besides life, and that was a stuffed animal of Winnie the Pooh. And Winnie the Pooh stuck with me through the foster home, and then when my actual parents adopted me, there I was with Pooh next to me. And I guess it was inevitable from there that I was going to start reading these stories, and ironically, I quickly moved off Pooh, and I got pretty into Eeyore. And I asked my mom today, I said, was I so into that guy? And she said, you were always sensitive to people's feelings, and I think you picked up on the fact that he was down, and you wanted him to feel better. So I just got into Eeyore a lot, really.
Well, and an interesting character. I don't know, is it too much to say the philosopher of that particular group?
He's the wannabe philosopher, certainly. It's funny about the 100-acre woods. Everyone has things they want to be that they're not quite. And the 100-acre woods is sort of weird because it's almost like the world has been re-pangeaed. Like, rabbits there, owls there, who is there? We get that, but it's like, Tigger, what are you doing here? This is not your ecosystem, sir. In Kanga and Roo, it's like interlopers. You shouldn't really be here either. And then you have this donkey who is really benighted, but he's not bilious in any way. He's actually kind of a Calvinist. There's this one incident where he writes a poem. He wants to be a poet. And Pooh writes a poem, too. And Pooh, he doesn't think his poem comes out very well. And he basically gives it up for Eeyore. He says, you know, yours was much better. And Eeyore just looks at him and goes, it was meant to be. Like he owns that. And you know how people always say, oh, I love to laugh. I always think like, well, you know, who wouldn't? That'd be really weird. But then I think, Eeyore wouldn't. He'd say that to you. Why? Because he's actually hilarious. If you went out for a drink with Eeyore, the stories you would have after. And as someone who went like 20 years drinking like 20 units a day and then gave it up, and then I got on the thistle, milk thistle, for my liver because I didn't want to have that cirrhosis. And that bonded me to Eeyore, too, in adulthood because it's his favorite snack. Now, granted, I enjoy it in capsule form, and he's eating the raw thorn, you know, like a proper burro. But, yeah, he was very Calvinistic and the wannabe philosopher and pretty smart, knows he can only control what he can control.
Why is it, you think, because the stories are so gentle, which is not really the times we live in, and yet the stories of Pooh, have continued to remain very, very popular through multiple generations. What's the connecting thread that keeps it as a children's and a family favorite?
Core primality, I would say. Pooh is in many ways a kind of id figure. He's akin to like the Lotus Eaters in the Odyssey, where he's just that honey junkie. He sees something he wants, and he's basically the one bear band version of going for it and kind of getting lost in comfort, what feels good at the moment. And his particular vice, as it were, is relatively benign. But I think we all enjoy the kind of thing where it's we've put in the good day, the hard, long day at work, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to destroy that eclair tonight. That is so happening. And I think that's Pooh. And then you have the different owl is grandiloquent. He's one of those people who wants to sound smarter than they actually are. And that's many people. That will always be many people. And his friends recognize this, and they don't give him the business about it. They let him kind of be him. And you have Rabbit, who has all of that energy, and ironically is the most literate out of everyone at Pooh Corner. And there's a huge emphasis on wanting to be an articulate speaker. They all sort of harbor that dream as being the most expressive, which is very interesting. And I think we all kind of want our voice to possess that sort of distinction. So that resonates with us.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. And well, let's move on to another wonderful series, and it's the work of Arnold Sobel and Frog and Toad, two just tremendous characters and their own collection of friends and acquaintances along the way. And the story is fascinating, too, in that these ideas were created by Arnold Sobel, if I remember right, when he was a little boy and very sick and bedridden.
Yeah, I want to say he was about like 7 years old, somewhere around second grade, and was one of those kind of, almost like Ringo Starr in the Beatles. Ringo Starr was sick a lot, and he wasn't playing with other kids, and he was in hospital, and that's how he got into drumming and everything. And so it began, too, with the Frog and Toad books. He was worried that he wouldn't be able to make friends when returning to school, and so he created kind of the ultimate friends, really, Frog and Toad, and they do not have a great many things in common, and yet that kind of antithetical personality mix between the two of them blends really congruously, and they love each other more and more because of how readily they accept each other, and they enjoy accepting each other. I think that's one of the crucial aspects of friendship, that it's fun when someone possesses something we don't possess, and we learn to let that become a factor in our life. It broadens our existence, and we're grateful towards that person. We want to repay that back to them with an even greater level of friendship, and that's what happens back and forth continuously with Frog and Toad.
And Toad, in some ways, like Eeyore, certainly of the pair, carries more of the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Toad is awesome. He's hilarious. I don't know that there are many characters. I don't know that there are many entities in this world funnier than Toad. He is so weird and so like, you don't like that I'm weird? You're going to have to deal with that because I am weird. Actually, you know what? It's not me. It's you. It's all of you. Get on board my log, baby. That's how Toad kind of lives his life, but more lugubriously, like with a little less energy. He doesn't quite have the pep that Frog has, but there are these wonderful claymation versions of the stories in the mid-80s, and you have this barrel-chested Toad. He looks like an amphibious blacksmith, and I was watching one of them today, and he loses a button on his jacket, and he is just losing his you-know-what. He can't contain himself. He's going around the forest, and everyone's trying to help him out. A bird shows up. He's like, the bird's like, I got your button. So it's like, are you kidding me, you avian fool? It's like the wrong kind of button. This raccoon screws up his courage. He comes over, and Toad absolutely button shames the dude because it's a square button, and he lost a round button. So he goes home, opens the door, after he's given everyone so much grief, and, of course, right on the ground is his button. He's like, oh, damn, my bad, dude. So he takes all the buttons from the day, and he sews them all into this wonderful jacket for Frog to try and make up for everything that he's done.
Now, is it possible, and it's been suggested even by family members, that the relationship between Frog and Toad perhaps was more than just friends?
Arnold Sobel himself was gay. He had a family, and then he came out in the mid-70s, and he ultimately died of AIDS, actually. Died really young. I believe he was in his mid-50s. And he actually narrates those animated specials we were talking about there. And I feel like that's almost a text or a subtext that we like to kind of project into things. We do it with Bert and Ernie, and I don't think it was kind of this symbolic, because you could be heterosexual and create the exact same characters. It doesn't sort of, you don't have to not be. I mean, it's really about friendship. And I guess when you have a kind of biographical element, people are going to project meaning into there. But I don't think it was some kind of cathartic venting process for him. It's more, to me, a way to say, look, you are allowed to be vulnerable to another person of the same sex, your friend. And that can be every bit as intimately powerful as a romantic relationship. And I think, too, the best romantic relationships, imagine you would say this, have a foundation of a very galvanic, powerful friendship. And so I think it was more kind of a way to say, to be friends with someone is to really give yourself over to them. And you should do that, because look how much fun these two amphibians are having together.
That's a great message indeed. Now, on a completely unrelated topic, the other night you were at the Hockey East tournament, the championship, and there was an official there whose last name was Koharski. Did you find out if he was related to the legendary Don Koharski of Have Another Donut fame?
If he is not related to that Don Koharski, we are basically in a Twilight Zone episode, because that cannot be the case. Now, he looked young. I shouldn't say this, but he's not going to hear this probably.
No.
And somewhat plump, just like Koharski. What you're referencing there, if people don't know that, there was this playoff series in the late 80s, and Jim Schoenfeld was the coach of the Devils, nemesis of the Bruins, and Schoenfeld gets kicked out of the game. They're in the hallway near the locker rooms, and Koharski, who is a rotund fellow, is trying to get away from Schoenfeld, and Schoenfeld is just yelling, "Have another donut, have another donut." And it's just hockey players, right? They're so good with just verbal japery. Take that. And yeah, it must have been like the son of Koharski.
It has to be. Too much coincidence for that not to happen. Colin, always great talk with you. Thanks for making time for us. And we will visit with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Colin Fleming, every Tuesday here on Downtown.